Hey, this is Mara Schiavocampo. You may know me from television as a reporter for shows like Dr. Oz and Good Morning America. But this podcast isn't about any of that. A few years ago, I started a major life transformation, losing 90 pounds and gaining a new understanding of how the mind, body, and spirit work together. That's what this is about. Your best life, elevated. So today we're going to talk about the keto diet. Chances are you've heard people talking about it. If you haven't, you will. I'm hearing about it everywhere. It's the latest craze that people swear by. Here's what fans say. They say that the keto diet helps you lose weight, completely change your body composition, and improve your health in huge ways. Things like controlling blood sugar, normalizing cholesterol, even reducing the risk of major diseases like cancer. So we're going to get into all that in a second with the two of my guests here. But first, how does it work? Well, it's not for the faint of heart, at least for someone like me. We've all heard of Atkins. This, to me, seems like next level Atkins. The keto diet is high fat, really high fat, moderate protein, low carbs. High fat is in up to 70% of your diet from meat, cream, butter, eggs, nuts, things like that. Low fat is in less than 35 grams of carbs a day. That's about a cup of pasta, less than a cup of pasta or one sweet potato. So here's what your body does with that. In the simplest of terms, the body uses your carbs for energy. But when you deplete carbs to almost nothing, like with the keto diet, the body needs an alternate energy source. So it turns to fat, converting it into ketones, which it can then use as fuel, sending your body into a metabolic state called ketosis. So with all the benefits that we've just mentioned, that comes from that state of ketosis. So is this really the prescription we've been looking for? Well, my first guest thinks so. He calls it the ultimate life hack. John Harrington has been a keto devotee for 3 years. Says it's completely changed his life, helping him drop body fat, reducing inflammation, eliminating long-standing sciatic nerve pain, getting rid of snoring, and eliminating hunger for vast stretches of time, which sounds like a huge benefit. You said you didn't eat for 72 hours once?
Yeah. About a year and a half ago, I was just kind of experimenting with fasting, and I think just by accident, I didn't eat for 24 hours, and I thought I'd just see how far I could take it. And, you know, at 72 hours, it wasn't that I was extremely hungry. It was more, I was like, you know, I'm not sure I want to take this experiment any further until, you know, I'm not going to work and commuting every day and stuff. So, you know, I kind of gave in, but it's certainly something I want to explore more.
So in terms of the logistics, the day-to-day, because I think for people who are hearing about this for the first time, or even people who have heard about it and are curious, they want to know, what does this look like? So what does your day look like when it comes to food? What's a typical day of food like for you?
Yeah. So, you know, just like everybody, my days vary. Over the last few years, I think I've really tried to up my knowledge base of foods that work for me. So a lot of that is through experimentation. But a typical day for me, I kick it off with what people often call bulletproof coffee. And that is, I put butter and coconut oil, in fact, MCT oil, which is extracted from coconut oil, I put that in my coffee. So I start my day off with about 600 calories, 60 grams of fat. And if I don't have a tremendous amount of exercise that morning, I just go to work, that satiates my hunger, and I pretty much have that fuel get me through a good chunk of the day. If I am hungry, of course I'll eat, but you know, on a day when I'm more sedentary, that's plenty of food. On a day when I do get exercise, which is about 3 or 4 days a week, then I usually, you know, about an hour or two after the coffee, I have a pretty robust breakfast.
Do you work out in the morning?
Yeah,
so
work out
in
the
coffee
morning.
And then a workout.
Yeah, so this morning, coffee at 6 a.m., worked out from 7 to 8, biked here about 7 miles, haven't eaten anything. But typically I would go to work, I would have a plate of bacon, eggs, you know, and I'm not really thinking too much about portion size. I'm just eating to be satiated. That's usually all that I eat for the day, until nighttime. And then, you know, to round out the day, in the evening, it's usually a piece of fatty meat, fish like salmon or a steak, like a ribeye cut, something like that. I think I was telling you on the phone that I like to order my beef from Montana. So I have a lot of, you know, my freezer's full of meat. And then some non-starchy vegetables on the side, usually cooked in, you know, olive oil or butter.
And what kind of vegetables are you a fan of? Because you can't do like potato and sweet potato. I mean, you could, but that's...
You can. Some people, you know, everyone responds differently and some people have more tolerance for, you know, higher levels of carbohydrates. I stick to hearty green vegetables like asparagus, broccoli, you know, things like that. Brussels sprouts.
And it sounds like that's the first time in the day you're getting vegetables is at night.
You know, in the morning, sometimes I'll throw some in on top of my eggs and, you know, but I don't seek them out. Like, it's not something where I don't really feel different if I eat them or not. So there's days where I'm a pure carnivore and there's days where I probably eat, you know, a pretty healthy portion of vegetables.
And what about fruit?
You know, I've really kind of trained myself to eat fruit as a dessert. I think there's some culture like in Europe and some places where you'll see dessert on the, you know, fruit listed on the dessert menu. To me, I love fruit, of course, but it doesn't work well with my diet. There's just too much sugar. So, you know, I'll eat some berries, maybe a handful of blueberries here and there if I crave it. I love cherries, when it's cherry season. So I'll certainly indulge here and there, but for the most part, I think of it as dessert and I eat it very sparingly.
I love how you consider cherries an indulgence. We like be more different.
What cherries
is a good day for me.
They're so good though.
So what about alcohol?
Alcohol, definitely a vice. I certainly enjoy it. I think, you know, early on through experimentation, I quickly found that, you know, drinking beer was very difficult to maintain a state of ketosis. So for the most part, I've eliminated beer. I can handle very light beer that's very low in carbohydrates. I can handle drinking, you know, a glass or two of wine every evening, looking for wine with low residual sugar. So dry wine. Usually, you know, if I prick my finger and test my blood and look for ketones, I'll see that I can maintain ketosis. But I have my moments where I overindulge. So, you know, just like anybody, you know, wake up the next morning and it might take me a good 12 hours to kind of get back into the same metabolic state that I tried to be in with keto, but it's, you know, it's a part of the lifestyle. It's something you have to be more mindful of for sure.
Now you mentioned pricking your finger and testing your blood. So explain that because most diets don't involve drawing blood.
To truly be in a state of ketosis, you can measure if your body is actually producing ketones and you can go to any pharmacy, Walgreens, and pick up a Precision Extra device that works just like a blood sugar device and use a test strip to actually prick your finger. It's painless and easy and measure your level of ketones. So it's a very easy way to see if the foods you're eating are actually putting you into a state of ketosis or if you're just eating low carb.
Now, there are also the pee strips, for lack of a more eloquent terminology.
Yeah.
Are you not a fan of those?
You know, I think for most people who, you know, try those, it's a nice way to kick things off and maybe get a little bit of reassurance that you're doing things the way you want. But they don't work for everyone.
Now, you hear a lot about keto flu. So people who are beginning the diet say that they experience flu-like symptoms in those first few days, sometimes lasting up to a week while their body adjusts to being depleted of carbs. And I can say, having tried keto, which I think I was probably more like low carb, but having attempted this several times, I felt so lethargic that I could barely move. Like, I just wanted to curl up in a ball on the floor and sleep. Did you have any of those symptoms?
So I personally had very mild symptoms. You know, it wasn't much of an issue, but, you know, some of my friends have experienced it more in more severe terms. I think my recommendation is to really familiarize yourself with the science so you understand what's happening with your body when you're feeling that way. Make sure you're hydrating. Speak to a dietitian, speak to a doctor. But, you know, that's something where it's different for each individual based on what I've experienced. And, you know, for me, it really wasn't significant.
So why did you want to do this? And why have you stuck with it for 3 years?
The number one reason I've stuck with it is I love the feeling that it gives me. I love the energy, some of the benefits that you mentioned when you kick things off. I think, you know, it works really well for me. It's easy. It doesn't feel like a diet. I'm eating food that I love. My relationship with food is so much more positive.
You don't miss like pizza and, you know, cake and candy.
I love pizza. I love ice cream. I mean, those are full of sugar and they're so delicious. They make you feel great for a few minutes, right? But over the years, through experimentation and experience, I've begun to really associate those foods with the consequence of how they'll make me feel. So when I look at them, I don't have that salivating like craving anymore. It's something where I eat them if I want to, which is just rare.
How has your body changed? Have you lost weight? Have there been any changes in body fat?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to see physical improvements, of course, and that was a motivator. But interestingly for me, my weight was 175 when I started roughly, and it's about 175 today. My body composition has changed. You know, I've measured body fat, every 6 months or so I check in, and I was able to add muscle mass and reduce body fat. And so that is a benefit for me personally, has been a benefit. But number one is day in and day out, just how I feel, you know, how I feel when I'm at work. I don't feel that sleepiness in the afternoon. I don't get those cravings for food in the middle of the day.
So now I'd like to introduce my next guest, nutritionist Maya Feller, who's here for an expert's take on keto. On the face of it, this sounds crazy, right? Because it goes against everything we've been taught. How nutritionally sound is this?
So I want to go back and say that I think it's really interesting how John has kind of attacked or stepped into this, because it really works for him. He's found something that he can individualize, that he can really maintain over time. And because nutrition is individual, that's where I like to start and say one size doesn't fit all. When we think about the standard American diet, it does follow the old food pyramid. Now we're actually using my plate, which is half the plate as non-starchy vegetable, a quarter as lean protein, followed by a quarter as grains, beans, or starchy vegetables.
So is that what kids are learning today?
That's exactly what kids are learning today. And so we've now come to this idea that grains, beans, and starchy vegetables are actually starches, right? And so we put those in a category together, and we're asking people to pay attention to the portion sizes of those. And then we say proteins is another quarter, because we're actually saying we want people to engage in eating more plants, because the plants are going to have phytonutrients. And when I counsel people, I actually say go for half that plate as the non-starchy vegetable. To put yourself into ketosis, it would be kind of removing the grains, beans, or starchy vegetables, reducing the non-starchy vegetables, and then increasing the animal proteins. It can be a challenge for many people to maintain that way of eating.
Well, that's the biggest criticism, is that people say it's unsustainable.
Right.
That it's just, now clearly John flies in the face of that. He's been doing it for 3 years and he seems very happy. But for a lot of people, it's very difficult because they miss carbs.
Right. Right. And one thing that I tell my patients all the time, I say, you know, the moment you leave this office and you step outside, there are a plethora of choices, and guaranteed many of them are based in grains, added sugars, added salts, and lab-made fats. And I like to make that distinction, because there is a difference between, you know, naturally occurring fats and the lab-made fats.
Well, let's tackle some of the assumptions that a lot of us have that may or may not be true. So first is the idea that you need carbs for energy. And to make it through the day, you need some carbs. Does your body need all those carbs to function and have energy?
So carbohydrates are the brain's preferred source of energy, and that's kind of what we say and what the science says. The ketogenic diet was originally started in the 20s for people who had epilepsy, because as you so nicely explained, what it does is it asks the body to use ketones, right, as the source of energy as opposed to carbohydrates. And so it changed the electrical impulses, thus causing fewer seizures. Over time, we have seen that in people who have type 2 diabetes, that following a ketogenic diet for some months, this is what the research says, some months, 3 to 4 months, has improved their circulating blood sugars, right? We've also seen for some people, and this is what the research says, an improvement in their total cholesterol. However, when we look at the long-term studies, those are still being examined when we're looking at that. The risk of some cancers also decreases. However, on the flip side, we know that when you increase your animal proteins, the risk for some cancers increase. And when you decrease your intake of non-starchy vegetables and also some of the starchy vegetables, it's not beneficial. But the laboratory made fats like the trans fats, those increase the risk of cardiovascular disease. And so that's what we really tell people to stay away from. We actually like people to engage in eating nuts and seeds. We also love for people to have oils and a variety of oils, right? So olive, canola, sunflower, all of it. We want them to really get in there and, you know, be liberal with them. We do say, from the nutrition perspective, like as a dietitian, if you're going to engage in eating fat, be mindful of your fat intake. And because the, you know,
but John's whole diet is fat.
Right. But that's a ketogenic diet. So when I work with people, that would be a specialized diet that we would be engaging in for a specific reason. It's not my first go-to when I think of weight loss, right?
Now, will it keep you full longer? Can you go 72 hours without eating if you have a fat-based diet?
Well, it's interesting. It actually, the ketogenic diet does kind of satiate you. And so there is a decreased appetite secondary to following that diet. Do I recommend it over time for the masses? Absolutely not. It's not something that I would say everybody should engage in. I mean, I always say to people, what is your end desire, right? What are you trying to affect? Are we talking about weight loss? Are we talking about blood sugars? Are we talking about hypertension? And that's how we really work on the diet. If someone's saying, I simply want to lose weight, and it's the average American, I'm going to say, how do I meet you where you are and get something that is sustainable that you can do over time so that you can lose weight and we can pay attention to your metabolic profile? Right. So that's where I meet my patient.
John, I want to give you the final word on this because, presumably a lot of people listening to this will want to try keto. So what are your tips for someone who's just starting out?
Yeah, I think to someone who's interested, the first thing and the best thing you can do for yourself is to learn and to read. And don't be overwhelmed by this idea of like, I have to just jump into it right away. But look at the food in your house, look at your behaviors, the things that, you know, what do you crave? What do you snack on? And find ways to replace those foods with things that fit the way you want to eat. But at the end of the day, think about how you want to eat, how you want to feel every day, and, you know, talk to a registered dietitian, talk to your physician, you know, learn about how nutrition impacts your own body. And I think it's a really empowering feeling when you wake up every day and your relationship with food is very positive and you're not counting calories and you're not, you know, feeling ashamed of what you're eating. You know, for me, I believe it doesn't have to be like that.
Yeah.
And there are so many, you know, directives that make people feel just so bad about their choices. And I think that if there's any one thing that we can take away is what works for the individual that they can sustain over time and makes them feel good while keeping them healthy. I think that's a beautiful point.
Yeah. Thank you both for being here. John, I appreciate you sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
And Maya, thank you as always. I want to give
you
your social information. You're at Maya Feller RD on Instagram and Twitter and Maya Feller Nutrition on Facebook.
Mara, I'll plug one thing. I don't sell anything. I'm no expert, but I love sharing the food I eat. And I have an Instagram handle called Life Eating Keto. And I post what I eat when I travel. I post the coffee I make. So I have a lot of fun with it. And so if anybody's curious about what my day looks like in terms of what I eat, it's Life Eating Keto.
And can people send you questions?
Of course. Yeah. I welcome it. I mean, you know, I'm obviously just an enthusiast. I don't have any expertise, but if anyone's curious about how, you know, how I've approached the diet, that's kind of a fun place to start.
Yeah, no, I think it's great to be able to talk to someone who is living it because expert advice is one thing, but like, how do I make it through the airport? Like, that's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
John, thank you. Maya, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
New episodes of Elevated drop on Mondays. Please subscribe and review. In the meantime, send me questions, ideas, or feedback. I'm on all social platforms as Mara Scampo and use the hashtag Elevated Podcast.